Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
We will market this portal to the world's users of mediation services. This is where they will come when they want to find mediators.
Last year, I got involved with a nonprofit organization based in the Netherlands called the International Mediation Institute, or IMI, set up in 2007 to promote mediation around the world. With U.S. mediator Judith Meyer, I was asked to become vice chair of IMI's Independent Standards Commission, which was tasked with developing criteria and standards for becoming an IMI-certified mediator. The task was particularly interesting given that the commission's membership consisted of advocates, users, academics, and mediation professionals from around the world, all under the leadership of Singapore's ambassador-at-large, Professor Tommy Koh. One of the things that became apparent during this process was that mediation is an emerging profession in many different countries, yet is facing many similar challenges, particularly in getting accepted and used to resolve disputes. So in this first of a two-part episode of IDN, I speak with Michael Leeths, Executive Director of IMI and former Head of Intellectual Property at British American Tobacco, about why we think IMI is a good thing and how the initiative works in providing users of mediation with access to quality information about mediators. Then next week, you'll hear the case as to why we think something like IMI is very much needed.
Problem is, how does a user of mediation services, could be a corporation or an individual, find a competent, suitable mediator locally, nationally, or internationally? Now, I've got a background in corporate counseling. I've been a user of mediators for a good number of years, and I've had great difficulty. I've always known of a few, but never had a proper opportunity to know who is truly out there that is good and is suitable. And that's why I've ended up as executive director of the International Mediation Institute.
And Mike, when you talk about it being a problem, maybe give an example. You want to set up a mediation, and why is it a problem not having access to names? Why can't you ask outside lawyers or people that you know for a good reference?
They've got the same problem that I have and everyone else has. You only know who you know. And that tends to be based on experience, contact, hearsay, directories, the odd article here and there, who's given a presentation on this and that. But none of this really strikes at competency. It's not transparent. It's not clear who is capable of doing exactly what and how good they are. So the information that is available is deficient. And what IMI seeks to do is to shine a beam of transparency without intruding on the privacy and confidentiality of mediations and the mediation process, into the known competency of mediators and better information about mediators. So that's what we try to do. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, and what we're trying to do with IMI, or what IMI is trying to accomplish, is to create a database or access to mediators who achieve certain minimum levels of competency. And we provide the imprimatur of assurance to users. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how that would happen. How would mediators get their names known through IMI, and how would users get access to them?
Okay, the first thing to recognize is that there are a very large number of very able mediators out there. I know that from my personal experience. You know it as well as an experienced user of mediation services. And they're out there. The trouble is finding them and finding the most appropriate individuals for particular cases. And moreover, recognizing that the choice is not just a choice by one party. The choice of a mediator, in other words, a neutral, is a shared choice among the parties. And that choice has got to be made on the very best available information. Now, how is the IMI seeking to establish this? Well, between now and the end of June this year, 2009, mediators who are on a panel of one or more of a number of well-known, recognized provider institutions, or who have passed an advanced competency test, and there are several around the world, can be grandfathered in as IMI certified without undergoing any further test of their competency. In other words, their competency is assumed by virtue of tests that they've done in the past and the mediator panels that they're associated with.
So if they're elite and experienced mediators and they're associated with either one of these institutions that's identified
yes.
by IMI as maintaining standards of competency, or they've passed certain rigorous exams in which they would achieve that,
yes.
they can be grandfathered in, and that's until June 2009.
That's for the next few months, yes.
After that, how's it going to work?
After that, mediators will be required to undertake an independent competency assessment test. And that test and what it entails is being determined at this time by IMI's Independent Standards Commission, which is a group of 50 thought leaders from all the stakeholder groups involved in mediation. It's very high level, and they are seeking to establish high standards here.
Thought leaders where?
Thought leaders all over the world. There are 50 of them in almost 30 countries. And so it's a truly global group of very experienced, thoughtful people that have a lot to contribute to this. And that Standards Commission is currently working on establishing the assessment route to IMI certification, which will be the only route through once the grandfathering period expires.
And how many mediators do you more or less predict you might have signed up by June?
I would expect that it would run to at least 1,000.
Around the world?
Worldwide, yes. Mm. But it could be a good deal more than that. There are many mediators who are very highly experienced. And because mediation happens behind a scrim of privacy, one of the problems is that you just don't know who's out there and who's got the experience. You can use panels and, there are websites. Some of them are open, some of them are not, to determine this information. But IMI is going to be completely an open access. Don't even need to log in, no user name or password, nothing.
I was going to ask you that. How will potential users access the information that would be made available through IMI?
You go into www.imimediation.org and you click Start Your Search. When you've done that, you come up with a few choices, pick lists, location, any particular languages, any particular styles that you need of your mediator. And if you need a mediator with a practice area knowledge or expertise, you can select that as well. And then the system will give you a range of choices meeting those criteria.
And that is live since when?
Well, it started going live in January. These are pretty sophisticated profiles, so they're not just names and addresses. The whole idea is that each profile of each mediator gives the user the ability truly to know this person to a pretty fair degree. But the key to it all is that every profile has to include a digest of feedback. This is a summary of feedback from prior users of that mediator, prepared by an independent person or institution that the mediator selects.
And what sort of feedback would this be?
Well, there's a feedback form that IMI offers on its web portal, but also many institutions actually invite their mediators to seek feedback from users for professional development purposes. The real problem is that feedback is rarely, if ever, shared. And what IMI is saying is, look, a lot of it is out there. Let's collect it. Obviously, to the extent that there's confidential information wrapped up in there, that confidentiality needs to be edited out. And the way to do that is through a summary or digest of numerous feedback forms. Right. This reduces the burden on the user in reading through countless number of feedbacks and puts it into a probably maximum one-page summary, feedback.
You and I have talked about this. I mean, feedback, yeah. At the end of the day, feedback is what everybody wants to have.
Yeah.
It's what you ask for when you go to get recommendations for potential mediators, and this is true also in arbitration. You always want to know what other people think of that person, what they thought of how effective they were in the past. So what these feedback digests would do, in a sense, is simply give through a controlled process the information that parties are genuinely interested in getting through the informal and, I would say, sort of hearsay gossip channels that exist today.
Yeah, it minimizes the negatives of gossip and hearsay, because what it does is it summarizes feedback from a vast number of prior users. And many people will be saying the same thing. And what you don't want to do as a user is read the same stuff over and over again, maybe expressed slightly differently. It's much more convenient to you to see a summary, a digest, prepared by an independent person, which is objective.
And who would the independent person be?
Well, it could be, for example, an institution. It could be the provider institution or one of them that a mediator is associated with on their panel. It could be another professional mediator. Could be a professional body. The quality of the digest from a mediator's perspective has a lot to do with the quality and standing of the preparer of that digest. And by the way, that needs to be disclosed on the IMI certified mediator profile.
And would this also include negative feedback as well as?
Yeah. If negative feedback comes up, and it does periodically, it must be captured. But in order to protect the mediator from those that just are frustrated,
the disgruntled parties that didn't disgruntled, like the way things turned out.
Whatever. It must be captured if a particular negative is repeated more than three times by different users.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. On an earlier podcast, Jay Welsh of JAMS said one of the most common complaints that they get in mediations is that the mediator made them settle. So if a party says, they made me settle, which is sort of a funny thing as a complaint because you think that's why you go to the mediation in the first place. But let's say you get a complaint like that the party says, the mediator made me settle, and I'm not happy that that's what happened. How would IMI's feedback digest handle something like that?
Well, in a case like that, the guidelines for the reviewers, that's the reviewer is the person that is preparing the feedback digest. The guidelines will invite the reviewer to phone the contributor of the feedback. And let's get to the bottom of this remark. Does it mean that you're dissatisfied that you settled? Why? Is it because you struck the wrong deal? Or are you saying that your arm was twisted in a voluntary process? How is that? And so there will be some challenge to that, because a negative is something that can very adversely affect a professional's reputation. We all know that. And there needs to be some objective protection for the mediator's reputation out of this. And on the other hand, if repeated negatives come through, they need to be known by future users. And so the system is geared to handle it that way.
How long is the – you have a feedback form, and that's about a one-page form, right?
Yeah, it's a couple of pages, actually,
Okay. So, I mean, so you would ask the users or the parties after completing – or the mediators, I guess, would ask parties after having completed a mediation to fill out one of these feedback forms that would then go into their digest.
The feedback form would then go in – actually, it would go to the reviewer.
To the reviewer, right.
The reviewer will collect them and then read through them and then make up a summary of basically how people are reacting to this particular mediator. And there are guidelines for how they write those things. And you just need to go onto the IMI web portal and see some of the profiles that have already been contributed into certified mediator profiles.
Okay. Here's my question, though, Michael. Mm-hmm. From a user perspective, I don't think that there's any argument that something like this would be useful to us, since this is the sort of information that we're chasing. I mean, you talk to other users, and this is not rocket science. It's obvious to all of us that this is the information that we would like to have, whether it's mediation or arbitration. We're always chasing the imperfect information. So no question that it's something I think that most of us would like to see. Why are you seeing, let's just jump to the chase, why are you seeing so much resistance to this concept among certain voices within the mediation community?
I think that, first of all, it's never been tried before. So this is new. And anything that's new is in all walks of life is going to attract challenge. And therefore, until people really get to work with it and feel it and see it operate, they're going to be dubious and possibly even agnostic about this. But not all. So already we've only been going now a couple of months, and we got well over 100 applications from mediators. My computer is pinging. Since we started this podcast, 10 have come online. So they're coming through. There are a few, but I have to emphasize, there are only a few vocal noises out there casting some doubt and concern about this. We're trying to address those concerns and explain what this is actually all about. And I am very clear that I see the negative voices and the hesitation and challenge starting to fade away. As mediators realize that this is the best possible marketing for their skills and competency that they could ever dream of. This is independent. IMI is not a provider of any services. It is utterly objective. It provides information, and most important of all, from the mediator's point of view, it opens up access to the world's users. And we will market this portal to the world's users of mediation services. This is where they will come, first stop, when they want to find mediators.
Next week, Mike will return to discuss why IMI is important for mediation, for court systems, and for businesses that need both. I'll provide the view from the perspective of a user of mediation services and explain why one of the world's largest companies thinks this effort is one worth supporting, particularly in these uncertain times. You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast, or the issues discussed, can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.